Ready. Our third case this morning is 17-1075, Auto Owners Insurance Company versus Shazar. Mr. Shapiro, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Stephen B. Shapiro on behalf of Appellant Jennifer Shazar. Auto Owners UM-UIM scheme and named driver exclusion in its policy violates.
Could you bring the mic over to you? Over to you. Yes.
Close. Is that better, Your Honor?
Yes. Better. Thank you.
Let me start again. Auto Owners UM and UIM scheme and its named driver exclusion in its auto policy violates Colorado public policy. It's a violation as to an innocent injured insured, which Ms. Shazar is. She was not negligent in the accident, and she was a resident relative insured of her parents at the time of the accident. Auto owner's policy also is a violation with respect to an innocent injured insured operating a non-scheduled vehicle. Our position is that if that exclusion is valid, it's only valid as to scheduled vehicles. And here, the vehicle being operated at the time was not scheduled.
But the exclusion says any. It's very broad, any vehicle.
Which I think violates the statute that enables an exclusion, because the statute, 10-4-632, says you can exclude for operation of an insured vehicle, i.e. a scheduled vehicle. Not a non-scheduled vehicle. And the reason is because there's a difference between liability coverage and UM coverage, and that's where the court fell down when it failed to recognize those completely distinct coverages, UM being a matter of public policy for the benefit of the driving public so they can protect themselves against those who are driving without insurance or
at. Well, what do we do with the Massengill case? I assume you were familiar with it and can discuss it in depth.
Yeah, I am
familiar
with it.
Because it is in the middle of the argument here and appears to counter your argument.
That's right, Judge. I'll be happy to respond to your question. Massengill is, first of all, distinguishable in my opinion, and second is flawed. First, it's distinguishable because the exclusion there is different. Second, in Massengill, the driver that was negligent for the accident. The excluded driver was negligent in causing the accident. That fact doesn't exist here.
Did the court rely on that?
It's
part of the fact background in the case, and in our case, obviously, the injured woman was not guilty of anything. She was totally innocent.
Right. I think the court did rely on the fact that they excluded this driver because of his driving record. He caused the accident, and therefore there's not coverage for him, and significantly here, not coverage for the innocent passenger, the daughter of the insurance under the policy, and the sister of the driver. She had nothing to do with it, right? And our position is that UM exists for anyone, anywhere. And let me bring it back to our policy. Our policy exclusion purports to exclude Ms. Shazar for driving any motor vehicle.
Any what?
Any motor vehicle. If she was a pedestrian hit by an uninsured motorist, that exclusion would not apply to her. And she would qualify as a resident relative on her parents' policy for UM coverage. Because exclusion purports to apply only if you're operating a motor vehicle. What's the difference between, and getting back to Massengill, an innocent passenger who had nothing to do with the accident, who is a resident relative insured, and a pedestrian who was hit by an uninsured motorist?
And that might be a good argument for why you disagree with Massengill, but to follow up with Judge Briscoe's question, I read Massengill to say that it's unreasonable for an excluded for someone who is excluded under a policy to expect UM coverage. And yeah. so if my reading is correct, it wouldn't matter whether the driver is at fault or not at fault, because in either case, it would be unreasonable for Jennifer to expect UM coverage.
Unreasonableness, it doesn't over... Well, first of all, I don't think it's unreasonable. Second, the issue is, what does public policy require in Colorado? Colorado requires UM coverage. Colorado allows...
If you provide liability coverage.
See, and I disagree with that, too. Because I think when you read 10.4.632, it speaks to excluding a driver of an insured vehicle. And that is a liability concept, because UM is not tied to a vehicle. It pertains to a person who is insured, acting in any capacity as a passenger, a pedestrian, and De Herrera, the son was operating a off-road motorcycle, not scheduled, and the court found that the son was entitled to UM benefits. What Massengill does, in my opinion, is that it rejects very compelling law from other jurisdictions that say when the cause of the accident is an uninsured motorist, that has nothing to do with the excluded driver's record and the reason why liability for that driver was excluded. You cannot dilute public policy that requires UM for that person, because that person had nothing to do with the accident. The accident was caused by someone who was uninsured or underinsured, and the public policy in Colorado is to make sure that innocent injured insureds in any capacity have access to UM coverage. Ms. Cesar purchased her own policy because she was excluded from certain coverages from her parents' policy. Liability, perhaps, medical, perhaps, property, perhaps, but not UM.
Well, let me challenge that. The policy language says, quote, the policy shall provide no coverages, plural, for any damages, losses, or claims arising out of operation or use of any automobile to which this policy would otherwise apply. So if the policy would otherwise apply, based on what you had earlier said, because Jennifer is a resident relative, this policy would expressly preclude that would provide no coverages, plural, for any damages regarding the operation, to follow up on Judge Briscoe's question, of any automobile, not your automobile, but any automobile, to which this policy would otherwise apply. So if you're right that the policy would otherwise apply to Jennifer as a resident relative, the policy expressly precludes any coverages for Jennifer.
Your Honor, I agree. That's what it says. The question is, does that comport with Colorado public policy, as expressed in De Herrera, in James, and in Pacheco?
So your argument is solely that it's a violation of public policy, but you're not questioning the express exclusion under the policy of Jennifer for any UM coverage for driving a non-scheduled automobile. Am I correct?
As written, if you apply it as written, that's what it says.
All right.
If you compare it to what is required by Colorado statute and public policy as determined by cases from the appellate courts in Colorado and from this court, it doesn't comply with public policy. There were numerous...
Are there any... Okay, what cases can you identify? I'm sorry to ask you so many questions, but are there any cases that specifically say in Colorado that public policy requires the insurer to provide UM coverage even in the absence of liability coverage?
No, there is not a case that says that. The cases that we cite for that proposition are from other jurisdictions, Delaware, California, Nebraska, all well-reasoned opinions. But I think that this proposition is analogous to Pacheco and also is analogous to James. In Pacheco, the definition of a resident relative said, we'll cover a resident relative as an insured as long as you don't own a vehicle. And this court said that dilutes UM coverage because you're saying a resident relative insured who qualifies no longer qualifies for UM if you own a vehicle. That's very similar to our situation when they're saying, well, Ms. Cesar has her own vehicle and has her own insurance, and therefore, even though she's a resident relative,
doesn't get... Is it really that parallel? I mean, in Pacheco, you do not have the express exclusion from coverage. I mean, and that's what this case, I think, is all about.
It's true.
Is it enforceable?
It's right. You're right, Your Honor, that we're not the same fact pattern. The question is, can you exclude, under Colorado public policy, someone from UM coverage who did not cause the accident? Again, let me go back to the exclusion. The exclusion only applies, if it's valid, to the operation of a vehicle by Ms. Cesar. She still has UM coverage if she's a pedestrian. She still has UM coverage if she's an innocent passenger. And so, if she is an innocent driver who did not cause the accident, should she be treated differently under Colorado public policy?
Let me ask you.
And my answer is no, she should not.
Even though she signed a document that is half a page long that said the policy shall provide no coverage for any damages, losses, or claims arising out of operation or use of any automobile to which this policy would otherwise apply when such automobile is operated or used by Jennifer Cesar. So, I mean, why is it unfair to a violation of public policy to insulate the insurer from liability for UM coverage when Jennifer signed this document clearly acknowledging that unlike her status as a pedestrian, if she's operating a vehicle, she's not going to get any UM coverage?
But my answer, Judge, is twofold. First, it doesn't apply to UM as a matter of public policy. And let's go back to Pacheco, where the definition of resident relative required that resident relative didn't own a vehicle. Well, the same question, why is it unfair to apply it as written? Well, it's unfair to apply it as written because it dilutes UM coverage. That's required by Colorado law. So just because a contract says one thing doesn't mean that you disregard the overriding Colorado public policy of ensuring access to UM coverage for those of us who carry insurance when we are in an accident with an irresponsible, negligent driver. That's my answer. I have 2 minutes left. Unless there's a question that or the court wants me to know, I'd love to reserve those 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I could.
You may. Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. John Marinas representing the Appley Auto Owners Insurance Company in this matter, and the result we are seeking in this court is an affirmation of the district court's finding that the named driver exclusion issued on Jennifer Cesar's parents' policy applied to deny and preclude Jennifer from obtaining UIM benefits on her parents' policy. A couple of things that were brought up in the first argument. First of all, Massengill is right on point with very similar facts. I believe the statement was made that it was factually distinguishable because the driver in Massengill was negligent. In the case in Massengill, the at-fault driver paid policy limits. There is no finding of negligence by the excluded driver. Secondly, it's just news to me after all the briefing that I think from the court's questioning is that they're not debating the text of the endorsement now. It's just a matter of whether it violates or dilutes public policy. That's a new argument, and it really allows this court to find, as did Judge Arguello, that the endorsement unambiguously excluded Jennifer Cesar from obtaining UIM benefits under her parents' policy.
Well, they've argued violation of public policy throughout their brief. This is not a new argument.
It's not. The withdrawing their argument that the endorsement itself was ambiguous,
okay.
I guess. I want to briefly review the notice of non-renewal. I also want to tie, because both sides are citing cases that cite the old statute, the no-fault statute, and the current statute, that I want to kind of untangle that spaghetti and find out which cases go along which line here. And then I think I don't really need to discuss the actual text of the endorsement, since there appears to be no argument to say it's ambiguous. The statute allows an insurer to tell an insured, hey, we're not going to renew your policy because there are some risky drivers on your policy. Statute completely allows that. Auto owners follow that procedure. And the statute says, at the time of renewal or cancellation, you can offer the named insured, you can go to them and say, hey, we'll withdraw that problematic driver and we will be able to renew your coverage for you. She was provided that notice. She was identified, and the named insured was also identified, that they could protest the action that was taken by auto owners. Auto owners.
Nobody's argued this, but is this a contract of adhesion?
No, Your Honor.
Really,
because
pretty much like one. You don't get coverage unless you sign here, and we're not going to cover your daughter ever for anything.
I don't believe it was a contract of adhesion, because it allowed both sides to make a decision.
Yeah.
They could have chosen to keep her on their policies and go with a different carrier. Yeah. And there's no broad industry-wide prevention from doing that. Insurers are not required to insure every single person that walks across. Some people are just, you know, crazy risky people, and there's no statute that requires you to have to provide them with insurance. Here, though, the notice said, if you want your policy renewed with us, you can do it, but we're going to exclude your daughters because of their problematic records. Both Jennifer and her sister signed the exclusion form, and the first named insured, the father, signed the exclusion form. And there's no doubt about the impact of this particular document. What happened later is Jennifer goes out and gets her own policy for her separate vehicle, the Subaru, issued by GEICO. She gets her own liability coverage on it. She gets her own UIM coverage on it. And from this accident, she even triggered and accessed and obtained all the policy limits on her own UIM coverage under her own vehicle. She understood that when that endorsement was issued and that exclusion form was signed, that she was not gaining coverage and access to her parents' policy.
Would she have gotten, as Mr. Shapiro said, would she have gotten UIM coverage from the parents' policy if she were an innocent pedestrian?
If she were a pedestrian, yes, she would have, because the endorsement deals with her operation or usage of a vehicle. And in this case, she was driving a vehicle at the time of the accident.
How about a passenger in a vehicle?
I would say she would be excluded under that situation, because as a passenger, she is still using the vehicle, operation or usage of the vehicle. And that's exactly what happened in, the Massengill case. Read to the very end of Massengill, because the son was the excluded driver. Son goes out, gets his own insurance on his own car. He rejects the UIM coverage on his own car. And then he's driving around his little sister, and he gets in an accident. That fault driver pays policy limits. It's not enough to compensate the two injured, the son and the boy and his sister. But they can't go to his policy because he rejected UIM coverage, so they try and go after mom's policy. And what the court found is that even that innocent passenger, the innocent daughter, it did not violate public policy to deny her access to UIM benefits. Yeah, it was UIM in Massengill. It was not against public policy to deny her UIM benefits because of the named excluded driver. The son was the name excluded. He was driving, and the endorsement covered all coverages for all liability. And the court said that does not dilute UIM coverage because they had absolute right to have the named driver endorsement issued on the policy. Quickly, under the no-fault statute, that ran from 73 to 2003. The no-fault basically had the same public policy reasons. We want to make sure adequately compensate people involved in accidents. Number two, we want to make sure owners of automobiles obtain liability insurance as well as no-fault benefits. And so the no-fault statute was written in a way that there were three key things that are relevant here. Number one, owners have to obtain liability insurance on their vehicles. Number two, the insurers have to offer UIM, but they don't. It's not mandatory. They have to offer UIM, and it can be rejected by the insured if they want it. The third prong is the important one, the PIP coverage. That was the part of no-fault scheme. The purpose of that was, or the requirement was, insurers shall include personal injury protection in their policy, regardless of fault, to pay for medical bills and rehabilitation. And part of the purpose of that PIP was most accidents or smaller accidents involve a few bit of medical bills. If you have a PIP obligation to pay that, there aren't going to be as many lawsuits for that type of recovery. But what's important in PIP under the old statute was that the PIP had to be afforded to the named insured, resident relative, and permissive occupiers of the vehicle. The other big component of the old no-fault statute was that it allowed for the named driver exclusion as well under the statute. So when we hit 2003, the structure kind of changes. And under the Financial Responsibility Act. And essentially what they did is they stripped out PIP, stripped out PIP, and they essentially augmented UIM coverage. And so the new scheme, which applies here in this case with these facts, is that every liability policy that is issued for the protection of persons insured thereunder must include UIM coverage. And that's the statute that is really a key here, because
Massengill was based on the previous statutory scheme, wasn't it?
Correct, Your Honor. Correct. No auto liability policy can be issued unless for the protection of the persons insured thereunder, meaning persons insured under the liability policy, and it must include UIM coverage. What's real important here is D. Herrera looked at that very specific policy or that very specific statutory phrase to say, well, if an auto policy has to be issued for the protection of persons insured thereunder and has to include UIM, what is persons insured thereunder? What's that really modifying? And the key phrase in D. Herrera, and it's kind of ignored in the appellant's briefing, means, quote, insurers must provide UIM coverage for the protection of persons insured under the liability policy. And here with the named driver exclusion, she is not a person insured under the liability policy. And in this current statutory scheme that we're in that applies to this case, has not the exact same, but it's essentially the same named driver exclusion where an insurer can exclude a problematic driver from coverage on the case. So both the old and new statutes have the same named driver exclusion. And the issue really here is how far did the named driver exclusion go? Can it exclude UIM benefits? And I would really like for the court to focus on, I kind of have a tally sheet here, of how many cases really involve the named driver exclusion in their policy. Because a lot of the cases that are cited by the appellants deal with the public policy arguments. I totally understand and get D. Herrera and all of its progeny about what we're doing with the class of UIM individuals. But if we're looking at cases directly addressing the named driver exclusion, you have four cases under the old scheme, under the No-Fault Act, that enforced the named driver exclusion to bar all benefits that were being sought. And one of those cases is really important, is the Principal versus Progressive case. There, the Supreme Court essentially said that the named driver exclusion barred coverage for a resident relative's benefits being sought under the PIP, under the policy. And so basically the Supreme Court said it doesn't matter if it's a resident relative or not. The named exclusion, named driver exclusion bars the coverage. And what's really important is this Principal versus Progressive case was decided about 3 months before D. Herrera came about. And D. Herrera kind of, you know, shook our boots as lawyers involved in this type of litigation. But in D. Herrera, at footnote number 8 in that opinion, it says that the Principal versus Progressive decision is not in conflict with D. Herrera. So D. Herrera issued all of its public policy arguments, but they're basically standing for the same principle that Principal v. Progressive stood for as it relates to a named driver exclusion. So let me keep the tally mark here for the cases interpreting the driver exclusions or named driver exclusion. Principal v. Progressive, Sercian, S-E-R-S-I-O-N, Graham, G-R-A-H-A-M, and Lopez v. Dairyland. All four of those cases enforced the named driver exclusion to exclude coverage for benefits being sought under either PIP or UIM under the old statute. Then we get D. Herrera. Now, those were cases under the old act. We get D. Herrera, and it's focusing on the class of people that are protected under the statute. And again, I spoke about the specific emphasis that D. Herrera made on the phrase of for the protection of persons insured thereunder. They're basically saying that the class of people that have to be protected are the same people that are given coverage under liability must be afforded UIM protection, and those classes have to be equal. But D. Herrera did not deal with the named driver exclusion. And D. Herrera only required UIM insurance for the same class of people who are insured under the liability policy. There's nothing disputed about the fact that Jennifer is excluded under the liability policy for coverage.
Say again, D. Herrera did not cover what?
D. Herrera required UIM coverage for the same class of persons who are insured under the liability policy. And here, D. Herrera, again, is dealing with classes of people. Our current statute allows you to carve out a person. And it's very, the statute doesn't say, you know, you got to carve out a whole class or that you can carve out a whole class. It just says one specific individual. So all these public policy arguments about protecting a class or whether they're an innocent passenger versus the driver or the vehicle, we're talking about the statute allowing an individual severance of an individual driver. And so with the D. Herrera, that kind of shifted the focus of we really protect the entire class. But here, Jennifer never even had access through the liability policy because she was a named driver that was excluded. About 6 years after 6 years after D. Herrera comes out, Supreme Court opinion, out comes Massengill. And I believe the court is right on. I mean, again, I went through the facts briefly that the son gets his own policy. His sister is riding in the car. And the court, for every argument that's made by Ms. Chazar at this point, every argument that she's making was addressed in Massengill. The public policy argument, the innocent insured, the little sister just being an occupier of a vehicle but not being a driver. Every single one of those arguments was addressed in Massengill, and Massengill came out ultimately and said that named driver exclusion for that son, because he was operating a car that was involved in this accident, he's barred from getting UIM benefits, and his sister and anyone else sitting in that car is barred from obtaining UIM benefits. It's because this statute allows a driver to be excluded from coverage, and then any result of that exclusion is going to, there's going to be some flow down as a result of that. And the Massengill Court completely recognizes that.
And we have no request in this case to certify a question to the Colorado Supreme Court.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired. Mr. Shapiro, you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you. Think about this. Doesn't the concession that Ms. Cesar, notwithstanding the named driver exclusion, would be entitled to UM benefits if a pedestrian, tell us that UM and liability concepts are not coextensive under Colorado public policy? She qualifies as a resident relative. If under that policy, if she's on the street and hit by an uninsured motorist, she's covered for UM. Why under public policy should you be allowed to exclude her if she is an innocent driver? The answer is you can't. And Massengill got it wrong with respect to the sister sitting in the passenger seat because it overlooked the fact that she was a resident relative, insured, entitled to her own independent access to UM coverage. But the court slam dunk coverage for everyone because the son, the brother, was a negligent driver. That's a wrong analysis. It conflates liability and UM, and they are distinct under the law. And that's why, one of the several reasons, Massengill is flawed. And the court also pointed out Massengill
was it appealed to the Colorado Supreme Court?
It was appealed, and cert was denied.
Should we certify it if we think the Colorado Supreme Court would disagree with Massengill?
I would love if this court felt that it was constrained by bad intermediate appellate law for this court to certify the question to the Colorado Supreme Court, because this is a huge issue for the Colorado driving public, and whether if they are innocent victims, they are denied access to UM, which Colorado public policy strongly favors for everyone in any capacity. I've exceeded my time. If I could have just one brief moment.
You may make a final point. You have 10 seconds.
I either misspoke or was misunderstood. I never said that the provision unambiguously applies to any vehicle. The way I read the provision, it unambiguously applies to a scheduled vehicle, and I did not mean to say otherwise, and I wanted to correct that record.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel are excused. Case shall be submitted.